Welcome to the True Faith Podcast. This is your host today, Ben Wade. We're here to just discuss the aftermath of a defeat at Brighton at home and Newcastle United's fifth successive defeat at home this season. I'm joined by Adam. We're the only two that could face
up.
So
everyone's drowning their sorrows somewhere.
So I think some people are just drowning, but
rocking backwards and forwards in the shower.
Yeah, probably. I've managed to drag myself out of mine, but so I think we'll just dive straight in. Adam, sort of your initial thoughts. How bad a defeat was that?
I think for the magnitude of what it's basically what it represented, wasn't it? We'd lost against a lot of teams that we probably expected to lose against. A lot of teams that have played in the Champions League over the last three seasons, that included Leicester. We've had a couple of draws that away from home, for example. We got very unlucky against Manchester United, and this seemed to be like, right, Brighton should be a winnable game. Let's get into them. And we started really, really well, didn't we, Ben? Like the opening 15 minutes before the Glenn Murray injury, and obviously very pleased he got out of hospital so quickly afterwards, which is very good news. But did you feel that, like, that early momentum that we had was just kind of killed a bit by that the elongated break for the Glenn Murray injury?
I don't know. It's difficult to say because we still created chances after that as well. I mean, I think what we saw very quickly was that we were had the opportunity to be the dominant side there, and I mean obviously we had most of the ball for the majority of the game, and we were the team that was forcing the issue. I think that was the encouraging thing that I thought that we've not done in the past against those types of teams, the Brightons and the Huddersfield, since we've all come up to the Premier League. They've all been very cagey fairs, neither team really wanting to take it to the other team, and they've all been really sort of dire games, to be honest, very, very poor to watch and not really any quality on show. I thought we showed the initiative yesterday. We were the ones dictating the play, moving the ball around, sort of looking to create chances, and Brighton were literally just in there just to sort of hang about, and I mean from minute one they were slowing the ball down, trying to slow the game down. And I think that, although obviously we had the injury time at the end of the half, that you're probably right in terms of it did just allow them to sort of settle a bit. And I mean the big chance really was the Perez one. If we score that, I mean that it's a good save from the keeper, but it's a real poor effort. He's got to be going across the...
I wonder with... Well, that was it. I wondered whether Perez purposely went for the side that you wouldn't expect him to go for. He tried to double bluff. I didn't know if he tried to double bluff the keeper, because the keeper, everyone would be thinking drive across, whereas he didn't. And
yeah, I take your point. He has. That's probably what he's thinking of doing, but when you look at where the keeper's position was, I mean, we could see it really clearly where we were from. I mean, especially with those types of shots where it's the ball's going across goal, so the keeper's having it. His momentum's going that way. It just plays into his hands. It would have been a much more difficult save with his momentum going to the left for him to then have to sort of shift back to the right, and that's where all the space was in the goal. And I think
you're right, and that's where all young footballers are told to strike a ball, isn't it, across the keeper, because that is the most difficult. So I just wonder if he was trying to be too cute, or whether he just shot very much off target for where he intended to put it.
I mean, what it does highlight is it just shows that's the strike of someone that hasn't been banging in goals so far, and he maybe snatched it, and it was a hell of a chance, but it. Maybe he had a bit too long to think about it, and as you say, the double bluff, if it was an instinctive strike, he probably would have hit it across goal, whereas he probably has, he's had a bit of time on it, and he's probably thought, oh, because of that sort of the split second, so it wasn't a split second decision, he's had a bit of chance to pick his spot, and yeah, maybe he has thought too much about it. But I mean, I think that was such a moment, a massive moment in the game, because if we take that lead, there was absolutely no chance that Brighton team, the way they'd set up, the way they came to play, there was no way they were coming back into that game.
No, I fully agree, and you're right in terms of there was a, you know, it was very obvious very early on that we were going to have a chance to dominate and in a home game in a way that we haven't been able to do since last season. 68% possession we had yesterday, and that's probably our highest in a long, long time. Even looking at the good results that we got at the back end of last season, you're probably looking at the likes of the Southampton game, where we might have sort of had as much possession as we did, and possibly others. But we played again last season mostly on the counter attack, so maybe we weren't as used to having that control. And you know, a lot of people have questioned Rafa Benitez's tactics. They did against Manchester United, and they certainly did it yesterday. What were your thoughts, Ben, on his tactics? Did he get it right? Did he get it wrong?
I think a lot of it's been made of because of the results. I mean, in terms of the way we set the team out, it's no different to any other week. We played the 4-4-2 with sort of two number 10s, as we did against Manchester, that worked brilliantly in the first half. And I don't see why it would be madness to then bring Hosslou. I mean, imagine if he'd have picked Hosslou yesterday, what the backlash would have been to start after that first 45 against Man U, and sort of how ineffective Hosslou's been at times. It would have been absolute madness. So it's just people setting guessing things again, saying, oh, the big thing it highlights is there's no other options. What changes could he have done there? You talk about the tactics as well, obviously, in terms of the in-game. I mean, the disappointing thing for me was that we played completely into Brighton's hands by constantly going down wide, down the wings, whipping balls in, and it was just getting headed away by their 6 foot sort of three or four defenders, whatever, it was going to have to be the perfect cross to find Perez or Muto.
I agree with that by that point, because Muto has that pace to play off the shoulder, you know, like Mike Lone used to do in his pomp, like Craig Bellum used to do, like Gail did. Against the sort of like big, no nonsense, immobile centre defenders that they have, to like you say, slip in Muto and use his pace in behind.
The problem with that is they weren't pushing up. They were playing easy. There wasn't the space in behind. Any ball, there was a few balls that went through, and the keeper sort of came in and sort of took care of them. So there wasn't really the option there. So I understand.
You're right.
I understand the difficulty of it, that we were stuck with what we had. But what we needed to do was play through the centre more. And when we did that, there was opportunities. I mean, there's a chance where Shelvey went through and beat a couple of players, showed some really nice skill. I think it led to the he had a shot and Muto headed one over the bar. Kennedy had a couple of really sort of dangerous runs in the middle, and when we were running through the heart of them, we were causing them issues. What we did far too much though was just played it easy down the wing, which is where they were trying to challenge that way. And then whipping balls in where it was just getting headed, and that's the frustrating thing for me, was that we played into that trap almost. We didn't react well enough, I suppose it's more down to the players rather than Rafa. The players couldn't work out that wasn't an effective way of attacking. It was almost too easy to get crosses in yesterday because they wanted us to do that, and we kept falling for that same trap. And as I say, if we'd have just been a bit more creative and a bit more patient in terms of sort of get things going through the middle, then we could have probably caused them some issues. However, I think the big issue for me I had yesterday was Perez was so ineffectual in that number 10 role. For me, that made it very difficult for us. Now, it might have been the fact that nobody was playing the ball into him in the feet, but I don't think he was working hard enough to get into space and receive the ball into him. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I agree with you about Jose. I think he was not performing to his potential, absolutely. And I think, as much as I think you mentioned about the crosses in the box and stuff like that, I think as much as they wanted that to happen, I think we looked really dangerous when we kind of peppering them and there was a few spells where we just peppered and where the ball was like a pinball in the box. And do you know what it is? It was so lucky that it kept landing to their feet to clear, because it could so, you know, it's just, flip a coin, it could land at one of our players and they've got to tap in the way it was bobbling around. But I think you're right about Perez, and ultimately I think nobody matched the performance levels of Shelvey and Kennedy yesterday, and because of that I felt that the rest of the team weren't on the same, they were out of sync with Perez and Shelvey, because they were trying to just create things out of nothing, and I just don't think they had that support from the rest of the side.
Yeah,
but then you look at the bench and you think, well, we don't have a game changer on there.
Yeah,
Hosolu, Murphy, Atta, with the greatest respect to the three of them, there's not a game changer in there. So there's people saying, oh, it's tactics, Rafa's tactics, and oh, it's substitutions. It's like, well, maybe he could have brought off Perez instead of Muto, but maybe Muto came off because he trusts Perez more, because he's known him for years. Maybe Muto came off because it's only his second start, and Rafa doesn't think he can keep up the intensity that he requires for the full 90. And maybe he takes Muto off because he didn't do as much in the second half as he did in the first half. So there's loads of reasons for and against that substitution, for example. And maybe he didn't make any other subs is because he probably trusted the starting 11. It epitomised that we absolutely don't have a squad. We have a first team, and that's pretty much it.
I'll come to you then just on that, because I think that brings me nicely on to the criticism of Rafa Benitez. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of things said on social media about about the tactics, about the team, or the lack of changes and things like that. And I suppose as well, that there's obviously always that overhanging concern of the players that we've let go. Give me your thoughts on those three aspects.
For me, tactically, yesterday, I don't know what more the manager can do. And yes, maybe there are tweaks that he could have them having 30 shots on target or whatever. So it's 30 shots in a game. But like, yeah, 20. His tactics yielded 27 shots in a game, which is the most we've had all season. If people were complaining about him being too negative in other games, we absolutely didn't do that yesterday. As you mentioned earlier, Ben, we went for it. We went for them right from the off, and they were rattled early doors. They really, really were. We had 27 attempts, only 6 on target. That's 22%. That's poor. And it gets to the point where it's not Rafa Benitez's fault that Hosolu comes on and hits a shot that hits the corner flag. That's not down to tactics. That's down to the quality of player that he has. Whose fault is it that we have the quality of player that he... Oh, well, they're all Rafa signings. He sanctioned them all. Aye, definitely signed them. He definitely has his first choice squad of footballers in the world right now. Definitely.
Can I just jump in quickly there, though? Can I just quickly just come back on there? So,
I think of course you can.
One of the complaints then is obviously we've let Gale and Mitrovic go in the summer. I'm not denying that there's obviously other issues in play, but where do you stand on the fact that we've only got sort of Hosolu as the striker? Do you think was that a mistake by Rafa to leave the squad that sort of thin? And obviously he swapped Gale for Rondon, who then has come in and isn't fit enough to play. Do you think Rafa should be apportioned any blame in terms of the dealings over the summer, or do you just think we've been a bit unlucky in the fact that Rondon's not been fit enough to play enough?
Okay, a few things. So Muto was the Dwight Gale replacement. I appreciate that Gale and Rondon swapped together, but ultimately Rondon's your Mitrovic replacement, Gale's your Muto replacement. I still think we needed an extra striker, and I still believe that we wouldn't have let Mitrovic go if Rafa knew he was getting £0 from that Mitrovic deal. I believe that. I might be wrong. That's what I believe. When it comes to Rondon, again, Rafa's pick, yes, Rafa's pick under the circumstances. If Rafa was given an £80 million budget like McLaren was a few years ago, I promise you, Salomon Rondon would not be the number one striker on his shortlist. He wouldn't, okay? Also, why is Rondon injured now? Why is he not fit? it's because he didn't have a proper pre-season. Why? Because Newcastle dick about in the transfer market. Rafa Benitez spends a lot of work and a lot of time, a lot of effort. You know, he works all weekend, he works evenings, he's obsessed. He's obsessed.
Imagine the overtime he's getting.
I know, yeah. So
I hope he's claiming for it. I hope he's claiming for it.
I like it. Toil, aye. Basically, he'll line up all the deals, and he would have lined that Rondon deal up probably before the World Cup. Fairly confident of that. But then what happens, because Rafa Benitez doesn't have autonomy, and the problem with Mike Ashley, Rafa Benitez, right, it's not just that Rafa doesn't get enough money to spend, it's that he can't spend the money that is available the way he wants it without having to get approval from the... That's not autonomy. That's not what he was promised. So he's been lied to then. He's been misled. And he's being undermined by that regime and that hierarchy. So if Rondon comes in at the time that Rafa Benitez wants him to come in, he comes in before the World Cup and he gets weeks with him. He gets weeks with him. Instead, what happened, Ben? He came in right at the end of the summer, didn't he? And he hasn't had a pre-season because he was sort of in out with West Brom. Is it on? Is it off? It unsettles him and he's not fit. And that's because the club doesn't allow Rafa Benitez to do what he does best. He's a fucking expert in this kind of stuff. He knows what he wants, and he's having to work without ever being given a transfer budget. He has never been given one since he joined Newcastle. So you could say it's a mistake. I'd say Rafa Benitez has been blindsided. And he lines up deals that the club are over. Case in point, Willie Caballero. Case in point, Tammy Abraham. And we don't get the players that we probably otherwise would if the club were proactive enough and efficient to get these deals done in a reasonable amount of time. I can't imagine another Premier League club dragging their heels over deals. And it's not like Rafa Benitez is asking for £50 million strikers. I don't understand it. Yeah. The problem is with how the club goes about the business, and that affects Rafa, that affects the players, and now it's beginning to creep into the crowds and affect the fans as well.
Yeah. No, I think you've said that spot on there. I mean, I think that's the issue, isn't it? And I think you hear it. I mean, it is interesting. Like, people going about... we were walking out of the ground yesterday and I heard people talking about Mitrovic and saying... What's even worse is obviously he's gone to another club and he's scoring goals, and you even hear it in the media, sort of people banging on about Mitrovic's goal record. Bear in mind, Fulham got beat off Cardiff 4-2 yesterday. So a lot of good that's doing them. But it's just like you're spot on. It's one of those things. Mitrovic, I always thought could have been a quality player for us, and I think he would have scored goals. It's undeniable that he would have been a better option than Hossolu. However, Rafa didn't fancy him. Now, if Rafa doesn't fancy him, what's the point of having Mitrovic at the club sitting on the bench? There's no point. We've got 25 million for him, so okay, that might be a mistake, but at the same time, a mistake would have been to withhold that player, keep him on the bench and not utilise him. If he doesn't fit into Rafa's thinking, then it's a waste. So people keep saying, oh, Rafa should be, he made a mistake there, but if Mitrovic doesn't fit into the way Rafa wants to play, then is it really a mistake? Rafa didn't sign him, he was a player that he inherited. So again, I think it's one of those where it'll linger on and it'll always be there in the back of people's minds. They'll say, oh, we should still have Mitrovic, but when we did have him, he was ineffective under Rafa playing the way he did. Now, that's whether you might not like the way Rafa plays in terms of that he doesn't utilise the strengths of Mitrovic, but you can't argue with the results that we've got playing the way Rafa plays, because we got 10th last season and we've been in all of the games this season so far. There's not many games where we've been completely and utterly outplayed and dominated, and you look at the teams we've played, they should have been absolutely destroying them based on the sort of the players on the pitch. So it's no, really
I totally agree with you, Ben. Totally agree with you. I, you're right, we haven't been completely dicked over, and you know, he's a very, very high quality defensive coach, and had we not had a defensive coach in, imagine we had like a Marco Silva, and even like Jokanović, like was talking about Fulham, you know, they're very top heavy, and that they'll leak goals at the back, and they will continue to do so because they didn't strengthen. They've got Tim Ream playing centre back. Tim Ream, right? To put it into context, do you remember when Ben Arfa scored that goal against Bolton? When he just sort of he did that kind of Cruyff turn on the halfway line. I was there, and he ran through. Tim Ream was one of the defenders where he passed at the very end just before he started. So Tim, that's how long Tim Ream's been about, and Tim Ream's been playing in the Championship, and Tim Ream is not a very good player.
I was going to say, he was at Fulham when they were absolutely dire, and Leeds before that when they were absolutely dire. So yeah, you're spot on with that.
So three other teams before us in Premier League history have lost their first five home games of the season and not then gone on to be relegated. They've all gone on to be relegated. So we're potentially the fourth. But the way that the Premier League has been the last two seasons, it's so tight. I don't think. Is as much, and this might be a controversial thing to say, I don't think there's as much of a panic as there could be, right? We've got 9 fixtures forthcoming now, which we might be... The thing is, if we have 27 shots against the next 9 teams we play, we'll probably win a few of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think we played that badly yesterday. We in terms of how we, you know, our defence was pretty solid. They got a corner that they shouldn't have done. That was poor officiating. And yes, I think Perez should have blocked the Izquierdo shot. You can't legislate for coming off the back heel of a player who didn't even know he'd scored himself.
Yeah.
And that they had 2 counter-attack goals, counter-attack chances in the second half where, you know, one lobbed over and then one Dummett made a really good challenge.
Yeah, I was going to say, and they were right at the end as well, weren't they?
They didn't threaten. So in terms of defensively, we looked pretty solid for the majority of the 90 minutes and we peppered them and dominated possession. So I think tactically... You replay that same game over and over and over and over, 9 times out of 10, we'll win it or get a draw.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what more. Rafa Benitez can't legislate for the linesman not being able to see that it came off Solly March and not Paul Dummett for their corner. Like, he can't legislate for that. He can legislate for maybe where we position our players and why did Perez leave Izquierdo. And I'm not blaming Perez for that per se, but I'm just kind of saying that in terms of, like, tactically, defensively and attacking and control and possession yesterday, I'm not sure what more Benitez could have done as a manager on the sidelines without actually getting on the pitch and kicking a ball himself.
Yeah.
And that's where the main criticism seems to come from. After Crystal Palace, we only had 6 shots, 3 on target. They were there for the take, and we didn't look. We looked so blunt in that game. I would much more understand criticism after that game than I would against Brighton.
Yeah. No, I think, and that's it. I think that's the issue, isn't it? Is that we've actually played probably one of our better games in terms of the we've created more chances. Let's put it that way. In that game than we have in most others, and yet this is probably the one where. There's been more criticism, and I think in terms of the reaction at the game from the crowd and things like that, obviously it was a very frustrated crowd. Obviously we shot ourselves in the foot, really. They've come in and I mean, they say they've done a job on where have they done it. I mean, they it was an absolute disgrace the way they approached the game, coming from minute one. As I said, the keeper, with every opportunity he had the ball, he took about a minute each time to clear the ball,
I don't blame them for doing that. I blame Andre Mariner for enabling them to do that.
Yeah.
Like Matt Ryan was taking, like you say, a minute for every single goal kick, and if he's getting away with it and not even getting talked to, would not even get a yellow card, then of course he's just going to keep doing it, because like we would. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we would do the same thing. So I don't think the referee was very good in sort of controlling that aspect of it. And Rafa was going mental on the touchline, kept pointing to his watch and sort of like, you know, he was furious. But they kept doing it. But, you know, the referee allowed it to happen, which was very disappointing.
That's it. I mean, he's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah. I thought that was poor. What I was going to ask you there, Ben, is you mentioned about the crowd. Now, I don't know what it was like where you were, but I found that even in the first half, right, after that really good opening 15 minutes or whatever, after that, and certainly after they went a goal up, that our fans were doing that awful thing, certainly around me in the East Stand. You can say what you want about East Stand, but that's my experience of it, that every time we... there wasn't a forward ball on, so say Shelby or Lascelles or whoever would pass the ball backwards or sideways to retain possession to then start again and start up a move again. But everyone was doing that awful thing of, oh, and groaning every time there was a, oh, backwards pass. It's just like, well, what do you want, mate? Do you want us to lump it forward and lose possession and then for them to come at us? Like, they're not a threat when they're not in, when they don't have the ball. They can't score if they don't have the ball. So is it not better? I got the point, actually, that Shelby, during the match, turned around to somebody in the East Stand who'd obviously just groaned at him, like, oh, for fuck's sake, don't pass it backwards or whatever. And he turned around and went, shut up. And for me, I mean, as much as I don't agree with how he expressed himself there, Shelby, and he needed to be focusing 100% on the game and being a lot more professional, like, he's got a point. Why are our own fans, in the first half, after we've had loads of chances and we're playing quite well, getting on our players' backs so early and like that, and it's not helpful? It's not like you gave the ball away either. We kept possession. Yeah, that was enough for some people to groan. And once that seeps in, I just think our crowd didn't help yesterday, and it played right into Brighton's hands. And what we need to do is be smarter as a fan base. Let's create an intimidating atmosphere. Let's make them panic. Let's shake them up. Let's make them feel like they're under, you know, it's like they're in a pressure cooker. Like, with the noise and the fact that we're attacking constantly, like, something will give the mentality. It tests mental strength. That what we didn't do is we didn't get behind. We started attacking our own players. So what? So Brighton had it easy in the end because they didn't. The atmosphere, they were just like, this is brilliant.
Yeah,
and they could hear all the Brighton fans because they were louder than a very flat crowd who were just sighing, tutting, groaning, and getting pissed off. It's just like, encourage, man.
Yeah, it's one of the most frustrating things I find with St James's Park at times is we do ourselves no favours, and you're completely right. I mean, I don't think it was the atmosphere wasn't that bad in the first half. I think it was probably towards the second half it was frustration was kicking in. But you're completely right in terms of the atmosphere is going to have a massive impact on the pitch. You know, like, and the players have said it before. They've said when St James's Park is rocking and the fans are behind them, and I mean, think of the atmospheres we had at some of the games last season. There's no doubt that it had a positive impact on the team. No doubt. Yet you've still got the people in the crowd. The second things turn nasty, the second things don't go our way, they turn nasty, and you've got people calling out players and getting on players' backs, and you just think, what is the point? Like, it's idiotic, and the worst thing about it is that everybody in football knows about it. How many times do you hear opposing fans come to St James's Park and say, keep the quiet, the crowd quiet for 10-15 minutes, see through sort of the initial sort of attack, don't let the crowd get on their side, and then it becomes a far easier game because they'll get on the players' backs. And It's embarrassing. It's frustrating that we do that. It's the idiots that jump on the backs of players so quickly. And that's the thing. I get that things are frustrating. And I mean, I was frustrated towards the end of the game. There were some decisions made from the players that wasn't good enough. And there were some frustrating things. I mentioned Perez's performance and things like that. There was a lot to be unhappy about. But don't do that like so early in the game. This is a time and a place to sort of voice your displeasure. For two, it was far too early in the game where there was the groans from the crowd, and really that game there was plenty of time in that game to get to get things going. And even like the free kick, I think we got when we had the free kick Kennedy one where Shelby, the keeper, makes a brilliant save from a free kick from Shelby. There was a little bit of a, like, almost a rallying, and it was the Newcastle song came out, and there seemed to be a lot of noise, and then literally within 10 seconds, we've lost the ball and it's gone, and it's just I can understand the frustration from the players because it would do my head in that it's fickle. It's like so quick to turn on things
When it doesn't go away. We've played far worse this season at home than that game yesterday.
Yeah.
We've played far worse. Yet they decided that game, the winnable game.
That's when we'll start shooting ourselves in the foot.
It's not like I don't empathize. Of course, I feel the frustration and the anger as well. I understand why people are doing that. But by doing that and vocalizing that so early in the game, it didn't completely cost us, but it really hampered us. And the thing of the confidence throughout the team when everyone's getting pelters, and you haven't even lost the ball. You've passed to another one of your players who was 20 yards behind you, and everyone's jumping on your back. It's like, Jesus, as if it wasn't being billed as a must-win beforehand. Imagine how nervous they would have been in that second half, like without the Newcastle fans getting right behind them and encouraging them. Instead, they were just shouting at them and berating them.
I think the crowd definitely shot. We shot ourselves in the foot in terms of the way. The way the atmosphere was, we could have had an impact in that game and we didn't, and I think that's one where the fans need to sort of have a look at themselves. And yes, the other mental thing was, though, like there was even sort of anti-Ashley chance trying to get going in block V, and there was just no reaction, whereas obviously we've had reaction in other games. Again, there wasn't even the anger against like the owner. It was just a strange atmosphere. It was almost as if things have turned sort of away from being anti-Ashley, and that yesterday it just felt like that was criticism of the players and the manager rather than the ownership, which is again.
It's because it's too difficult just to get rid of Mike Ashley. That it requires effort, and I think apathy and resignation set in yesterday with the fans. It certainly for me in the second half, I was kind of watching. I barely shouted anything. I was just watching it. Just same. Having it was in the same way that I knew what was going to happen when Mata scored against us at Old Trafford. I knew that they'd get the third goal after he scored one, and I kind of knew that we weren't ever going to score. It got to the point where you knew it just wasn't going to happen, and it's awful, and it's very, very difficult being a Newcastle fan at the minute. And I tell you what, all those people saying Rafa out and Rafa's tactics and Rafa's subs and all this, you're just playing into Mike Ashley's hands. That's exactly the PR and the social media commentary that Mike Ashley wants, and we're giving it to him.
Yeah, spot on. I don't think there's anything else to say on it, really. Have you got anything else you wanted to discuss?
No, I mean we go away to Southampton next. They're not a very good team at the minute. I think we play like we did then, and if Shelvey and Kennedy maintain their performance levels like they did, and I thought they were both excellent yesterday. Fernandes as well, I thought was pretty damn good as well. But I think if we have those players turning up against Southampton, I think we might be able to nick a win. I really do. Like we won't probably have the possession that we had there, but I think we can create enough good chances and get something. I think it's getting to the point where we need to,
Yeah. Hopefully as well. It's away, so they'll hopefully not have the Boo Boys out getting on their backs. And you're right in terms of, this is a very similar Southampton team that came to St James's Park last season and got absolutely destroyed 3-0 in probably one of the easiest games we played last season. So there's potential there for it to be a really good opportunity for the lads to go and finally get the first 3 points of the season. We need to win a game soon, without a doubt. Southampton have been poor, and obviously they've got a draw against Bournemouth away from home yesterday, so they're not sort of playing any, they're not pulling up any trees and playing any sort of decent football at the minute, so it is a massive opportunity. You're right, I feel like we've been very, very depressing in this podcast, and I guess that's just how we feel, but I think you're right.
It's duality, mate.
Yeah, there were a few positives, as you say. Kennedy did some really good stuff. He did some not so great stuff, but that's the type of player he is. We need to encourage him to keep trying those things. And some things came off, some things didn't. but I'd much rather him be trying and it not coming off than not trying, because we rely on him to be a creative spark. I think we need a hell of a lot more from Matt Ritchie. I mean, he got in the box a couple of times, missed a couple of headers yesterday. But again, him and Yedlin need to work better as a partnership in terms of an attacking threat for us. We need more of them, but they were getting opportunities, so I suppose that was a positive. And Shelvey, again, everything, every time he was on the ball, he was looking to do things. And I think, providing we've got players that are willing to try things, they shouldn't be called out for trying that. Because if we didn't have those players, imagine what... I mean, if we had a midfield of, say, Colback and Hayden, for example. I remember one of the games the season we went down, who literally just played the ball sideways and backwards. And sorry, it wasn't Hayden, it was Nita, wasn't it, I think. We're so lucky to have a Jonjo Shelvey in the team that we'll actually try and pick players out and look forward, because we know we've had far worse in the past, so we shouldn't get on these players' backs when they try something that doesn't come off. On Southampton, it's a massive opportunity. We can win that game. So let's go and do it. Adam, I think we'll call it there. Thank you for coming on with us.
No worries, thanks, Ben.
And hopefully we'll be speaking after a Southampton win, and we'll be in much more buoyant mood with more people to come and talk to us.
Let's back the manager and let's back the players.
100%. This has been the True Faith Weekly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Keep an eye out for if you're a Patreon member, there'll be quite a few shows coming out throughout the week, including the preview and things like that. So keep an eye out for them. And thanks for listening.